Welcome back, everyone. Hope you all had a great lunch. Some of you braved the weather. I enjoyed walking in the rain. On to our NOAA guidance on counsel for the financial disclosures and voting recusals. This will be presented by Attorney Sikowski. I believe this is your first presentation for the council. Have at it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those who don't know me, my name is Scott Sikowski. I work at the NOAA Office of General Counsel. If you're trying to place me, at least one staffer at GARFO has referred to me as the Vice Mitch. I'm okay with it. But what I'm going to do is, as part of my duties as Vice Mitch, is I'm going to try to explain the rules surrounding recusal and the financial disclosures, reasons for it, what we go through when we make these sorts of decisions, and the reasons for it. This is my first time giving this presentation. I thought I would, rather than try to lecture folks, kind of give my thoughts on what I struggled with in preparing it and reading the statute and reading the regulations, holes I was trying to poke in it, and the like. Next slide, please. So why have financial disclosures? Why have recusal requirements? Why am I doing this to you after lunch? The answer to that is all the same thing. It's really important. It's important for the public in this space to understand that people are being as selfless as possible and putting the resource and other people's interests first. I am the first to say that I do not envy your folks' position. I've sat here for about a year now. I've seen some really difficult decisions you folks have made, and rest assured I sat here thinking I'm really glad I don't have to vote on this thing. Something else I think about a lot in this job generally is every first year law student learns about a doctrine called ferae naturae, which is essentially a property rule that nobody owns wild animals, and you don't own them until you can reduce them to your possession. And as it relates to fishing, that you folks manage the natural resource on behalf of the public. Nobody owns it. It is your responsibility to steward it for future generations, and it's just a really heady responsibility in my view. Next slide. If your sense of civic duty isn't enough, it's also enforceable by federal law. So Section 208 prohibits personal and substantial participation in matters in which anyone has a substantial financial interest. That applies to federal executive employees and independent agencies. There are criminal and civil penalties associated with this. Council members, by rule, are subject to most of the same sorts of federal criminal statutes as the rest of us are, covering bribery, conflict of interest, disclosure of confidential, and lobbying with appropriated funds. So it's in your interest to be as safe as possible. Next slide, please. This is, you're all here for a reason. This is the actual standard for membership on this council. Everybody here, by virtue of occupation or experience or knowledge, are experts in the realm of fisheries management. I feel pretty confident saying I wouldn't qualify under this definition, but I'm glad you all do. But within this, an interesting conflict that arises is that folks who have expertise in this field naturally are going to have some interest in this field. There's going to be industry members. There's going to be folks who have conservation stakes. And that is not necessarily a problem to a point. And that's kind of what I'm here to explain a little bit better. Next slide, please. Okay. There's going to be a lot of text on these slides. You all have them. I'm not going to read them all to you verbatim. I'm happy to answer questions at the end or catch me on a break. The first thing to think about when you're talking about recusals is who has to recuse and when. The who is what's called an affected individual by statute, and that's anybody nominated by the governor to be appointed as a voting member or appointed by the secretary. That's not everybody at this table. You can see on the bottom, the NIMS representatives, the Coast Guard representatives, and the state officials are not affected individual by regulation and statute. Lieutenant Blyfus I assume you're going to still listen to me past this slide. But what the affected individuals have to do is they need to, one, disclose financial interests, and then two, recuse themselves under the proper circumstances. We're going to spend basically the rest of this presentation trying to drill down on both of those. Next slide, please. This is take home number one. Most of the time, if you have a financial stake in one of the council's decisions, you're going to disclose the financial interest and vote anyway. Like I said earlier, the statute contemplates some level of financial interest in some of these decisions based off your participation in the fisheries or otherwise, and allows it. So not every financial interest is disqualifying. But you see on the bottom there, it says once it gets too large, and we'll talk about that, then recusal might be required. Next slide, please. Okay, who? Whose financial interest must be disclosed? You? Your people who you might have a direct financial relationship with, your spouse or partner, your minor child, and any organization you're serving as an officer, director, trustee, partner, or employee. Next slide. When must financial interests be disclosed? You must disclose them upon taking office within 45 days. 30 days, there's an ongoing obligation. Anytime you have a financial interest is acquired or substantially changed, you have to update that within 30 days, and annually regardless on February 1st. I think I heard Andy ask Sherry if he had to do it again after just being appointed, and sorry, man, you gotta do it again. Next slide, please. What financial interest must be disclosed? This is specific to fisheries and fisheries. You don't have to disclose all financial interests, but specific to harvesting, processing, lobbying, advocacy, and marketing activity that will be undertaken by any fishery under the jurisdiction of the council. Two of the things that I asked Mitch when I was preparing this conversation that struck out for this is fishery, it has to be fishery specific, so non-fishery related financial interest, your cryptocurrencies, your stock in Microsoft, do not need to be disclosed. And under the jurisdiction of the council kind of struck me as well. If you have financial interest in a fishery that is not part of the jurisdiction of this council, it doesn't have to be disclosed as part of your membership for this council. I kind of find that surprising, to be honest. Employments as an officer, director, trustee of an association whose members participate in the fisheries must be disclosed. And then companies that own or owned by you that have any of these specific phrase harvest process, lobbying, advocacy, and engaged in marketing. We have standard forms for these things. You folks have all filled those out at this point. And they are posted online. Next slide, please. Takeaway number two, don't hold back or lie on your financial disclosure forms. There are, in addition to Section 208, which we talked about, Magnuson specifically has civil penalties and permit sanctions for knowing and willful violations of failing to disclose financial interests. Something else that struck me is Section 208, if you substantially participate in a matter in which you have substantial interest in or a financial interest in, it doesn't necessarily have to be knowing that you're concealing something. Theoretically, as I read the statute, it could be a negligent or reckless violation. Possible sanctions also include removal under the council. That hasn't happened in the year I've been here, though. Next slide, please. How is the disclosed information used? What am I giving all this information over for? What it is used for is to determine whether you need to recuse yourself from any given vote. So when, and we'll go through it, how exactly that gets decided, but recusal is removing oneself from the voting process to avoid a conflict of interest. Next slide, please. Okay, what are the effects of recusal? The statute says that the council chair may not allow any affected individual determined to have a conflict of interest to cast a vote in that decision. The may there isn't permissive. As I read it, it is may not as in cannot allow you to vote. If the individual may not vote, they can state for the record how they would have voted, and they can actually actively participate in the deliberations of the decision after having disclosed the existence of the conflict and notice to recuse oneself. Next slide, please. Who makes recusal determinations? A designated official by statute is the one who makes this. He is in the room with us today, and I hope to have hair like his someday. I was also hoping to make his face turn red, but I didn't succeed. Mitch is the designated official for NOAA Office of General Counsel. I am helping in those determinations. We've had a few matters here and there that to help me learn the ropes in this world. The designated official uses the information disclosed on your financial interest forms to determine whether or not a conflict exists. And you can also use reliable and probative information in writing elsewhere. We have pulled APSD reports to see what people's overall percentage of catch relative to a fishery or sector or gear type in order to make sure we're doing the right thing. Mitch may also contact you if they have questions. Nobody's in trouble, but just a lot of times need some clarification. It's possible you have, or we have a question related to your financial disclosure form. It's possible we want to make sure we're not working with old information. So don't fret if you get a call from us. Next slide, please. Who can initiate recusal determinations? Basically anybody. I asked this question of Mitch. The affected individual, him or herself, can do it. I think that's a good practice if you're at all worried about the potential for a conflict, is come to us, ask us. We'll do the necessary legwork and make a determination. When that should happen is, in my view, as soon as humanly possible. Mitch is pretty well seasoned at this stuff, but I am not. So everything takes me a little bit longer than otherwise. And I want to make sure I'm not making sure people can vote when they can and shouldn't vote when they shouldn't. Next slide, please. Who initiates recusal determinations? Continue. Mitch can, if he wants, initiate a recusal determination himself based off the information that he knows. We have fielded questions about from other individuals. Basically, if you come to the designated official and ask the question, you can, get an answer based off of it. And I've enjoyed this a lot, but because I've learned a lot at the beginning, before each council meeting. Kate and Moira and Mitch meet, and I've got to sit in those meetings where they have some of these questions, and it's been really enlightening. Next slide, please. All right, this is when it gets dense. When are recusals required? The statutory requirement is when a council decision has a significant and predictable effect on the financial interest that's required to be disclosed. Remember, significant and predictable effect, because we're going to drill down on that. Next slide, please. This is the test. This is what we would use to determine whether or not recusal is required. Is there a council decision? Is there a member with a financial interest affected by that decision? Is there a close causal link between those two? And is there an expected and substantial disproportionate benefit to that member's financial interest? If any of those four questions, the answer is no, then recusal is not required. Next slide, please. What is the council decision? The council decision is not anything the council decides on. It is specific to FMP and FMP amendments, including any proposed regulations, requests for changes to regulations implementing an FMP, the finding that an emergency exists, and any recommendations on how to respond to it, and comments on secretarial actions. Next slide, please. All right. What is a significant council decision's a little bit easier. What is a significant and predictable effect? It is defined as a close causal link between the council decision and an expected and substantially disproportionate benefit to the individual's financial interests relative to the other participants in that deer type, fishery, or sector. Next slide, please. What's a close causal link? That is defined as, what I think about here, I won't read the definitions, is the use of the adjective close means that it's not just any conceivable causation. If you say, well, if these folks get to remove this fish that prey on the forage fish that I like, there'll be more forage fish for my fish and I might get more fish later, right? That there's pretty attenuated in terms of the causal link between the council action and the financial benefit to the council member. So the rules specifically are trying to not allow for recusal under basically any conceivable causal link between the decision and the financial interest. The next two points I had to rewrite three times to totally understand, but my, and Mitch, you might need to correct me here because I might say it wrong. The close causal link test is satisfied where there are implementing regulations most of the time, unless there is too attenuated a chain of causation, meaning like that what we were just talking about, or there's no real possibility that it's going to affect. He's nodding, so I did it okay. This is kind of a esoteric, kind of hard thing for me to understand. I don't expect you two from being just having to read this slide just now, but if this is part of the process that we would go through to make sure that we're making the right decision. Next slide, please. We're not making it up as we go along, I promise. What is an expected and substantially disproportionate benefit? It is positive or negative. It uses the word benefit, but it doesn't have to be positive. Impact regarding the council's decision is likely to affect the fishery or sector of the fishery in which there is, and this is what matters, significant financial interests. Again, significant comes to the realization that not all financial interests require recusal, and we'll talk about what significant means. Next slide, please. Significant financial interest. And for those keeping track, this is the definition of the definition of the definition that requires recusal. It is but it matters. This is where kind of the rubber meets the road. It's a greater than 10% interest in the total harvest of the fishery or sector of fishery affected by the decision, a greater than 10% interest in the marketing or processing of the total harvest of that fish, or full or partial ownership of more than 10% of the vessels using the same gear type for that sector. That is kind of our 10% rule. That's what when I said sometimes we ask APSD to see how much of a fishery or sector or gear type folks are harvesting. That's just to make sure we're under that amount. Next slide, please. I am going to spare you all the possibilities of attribution, but rest assured that there are ways of dealing with partial ownership. There is ways of dealing with indirect ownership, employment. If you own a boat, but you work on your brother's boat, but you own 25% stock in the company that your sister owns a boat for, there are ways in which to attribute that ownership for purposes of recusal determinations. Next slide, please. But within that, telling us what your interest is, if it's less than 100%, is important so that we can make that determination. If you don't, we have to assume you own all of it, and that could affect your ability to vote. Next slide, please. There's similarly with people's employment, with associations and organizations and spouses and folks for attribution purposes. If you have any questions regarding these specifically, I'm happy to talk to you offline. Next slide, please. Okay, this is just a reminder slide. What happens when you're recused from voting? You disclose that you're recused, you identify the financial interest, and you could still say how you would vote, and you could still participate in the deliberations. Next slide, please. Okay, that is the framework of the general rule, and there's always an exception to the general rule, and that is what is called the particular matters primarily of individual concern. And that is if you kind of uniquely have a financial interest, almost, not, I wouldn't say solely, but like unique to you. You have a contract, you have an employment opportunity, something that is you and directly impacted by the vote. There's a special regulation that requires recusal under those circumstances, and you can't actually participate in the deliberations. So with that, Mitch has said that has come up a couple times with this council. It sounds like people are good about identifying that and coming to talk to us early on when you can and cannot vote under those circumstances. Next slide. Okay. So you go through this entire process. You say you get a recusal decision from me, and I say you can't vote in this specific matter, and you say, you know, Scott, you seem like a nice guy, but isn't there anybody smarter than you that I can talk to? The answer is yes, my bosses. My bosses are all smarter, and if they're listening, they're all better looking than I am. And you can appeal the designated official's recusal determination to the NOAA General Counsel's office. So I don't know if he makes the determinations or he has a designee who would review these determinations. But what's important here, if you don't like one of our recusal determinations, you have to petition the NOAA General Counsel within 10 days of that determination. He or his designee then has 30 days from that receipt to make a decision. And if he decides, Scott, you were wrong this whole time, you made the wrong decision, it affected the council, the outcome of the action by statute, it isn't grounds for reversing the council action. So I'll try hard not to be wrong. I know Mitch does and is rarely wrong from my experience, but there isn't like a, you can't file a lawsuit and say, well, if Scott wasn't wrong, you know, this action wouldn't have went through. Next slide, please. The Office of General Counsel is working on a procedural handbook with all of this information in it. I specifically left a lot of the information into the slides so that you folks would have it, because the handbook is not finished yet. It is a work in progress. It will have all of these nice things associated with them at some point, but just not right now. But if you have questions regarding any of these things, we deal with them. They're just not necessarily follow some uniform process across regions. But we can chat. Next slide, please. So the process for doing this is kind of complicated. There are a lot of cooks in this kitchen. There is a need to be nationally consistent while also being regionally specific, and that's kind of led to it's a big undertaking, and I kind of bombed in the middle of it and have been trying to ask about it, but the timeline for the finishing of the handbook is not yet clear. Next slide, please. How are recusal determinations made public? To date, council members, and I'm relying on Mitch here, have announced individual decisions, and by statute, the agency has to provide Congress with an update regarding conflicts and recusal decisions. And the handbook, whenever it comes to us, will have a process for possibly more transparency, which would be good. Next slide, please. Last slide, I promise. This where you can get more information. These are all the sites that I've talked about throughout this presentation. You folks know where the member disclosure forms can be found. And I thank you for your attention, and Mitch will be happy to answer any questions you might have. I think I did it in half an hour.
Thank you for your presentation, Attorney Kelsey. Great job. Any questions for either of our Mitch or Vice Mitch? It'll stick. Well, thank you very much. I see no questions.